It's 8 p.m. and you're listening to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM and online at cooperadio.org. I'm Sandy Goldman, and it's back to school for many students and families. So I thought it fitting tonight to explore the world of cooperative games and how they can help lay the foundation for all kinds of important lessons. But we'll begin, as always, with Paul MacDonald and our co-op news and events. Hi, Paul.
Hi there, Sandy. Thanks very much. The owner of the Rio Theatre in Vancouver says the deal to buy out the property and save the venue on East Broadway has been completed. The deal went through after 7 months of campaigning to keep the venue's doors open. The overwhelming support from the community to save one of the last independent theatres in Vancouver has been nothing short of amazing, said a statement from the theatre. Theatre owner-operator Corrine Lee and her business partner made an offer to buy out the theatre in late February, but they needed funding for a down payment. The theatre's operators relied on fundraising, private investors, celebrity cachet, and a $375,000 grant from the City of Vancouver to raise the cash. On September 17th, the theater is holding two free screenings of The Big Lebowski to celebrate and thank the community. And the Co-op Community Spaces program has donated $56,000 to help build the Food Eco District Learning Garden in the Greater Victoria Public Library. The garden will be an outdoor classroom where gardeners and wannabe gardeners can learn how to save seeds, identify local plant species, discover First Nations plant uses, and learn how to grow food in urban spaces. The Co-op Community Spaces program invests in community projects throughout Western Canada. This year it has given $2 million to 24 organizations. Since 2015, it has donated $6.5 million to 88 projects. And when the chicken's on the grill, Otter Co-op customers know the check's in the mail. In fact, it's the most anticipated time of the year for the long-standing Fraser Valley organization, says Co-op Board President Angie McDougall. Each year, co-op members share in the profits generated based on how much they spend on fuel, groceries, clothing and housewares, farm supplies, and more. And this year, the total distributed amounted to more than $5.9 million. Otter Co-op has had a lot of success, and a big part of that is its people, both co-op members and staff, who put a real emphasis on service, says McDougall. The co-op has guests who have shopped with it for 70 years. Founded in 1922 by a group of Fraser Valley farmers who wanted to combine their purchasing for increased buying power, the 96-year-old Otter Co-op today boasts more than over 32,000 active members. And what about that chicken on the grill? Well, as a thank you to customers, Otter Co-op hosts an annual barbecue chicken dinner. And in events, the next monthly Co-op Cafe is happening Wednesday, September 26. The Co-op Cafe will be held at the Lost and Found Cafe at 33 West Hastings Street in Vancouver from 8 to 9:30 a.m. The Co-op Cafe is your chance to get to know the co-op community, workshop problems and ideas, and discuss current events through the co-op lens. You can jam on ideas for how the co-op culture in Metro Vancouver and beyond can be nurtured. And coming up tomorrow is the first West Coast screening of a documentary on co-ops, A Silent Transformation. The film is about the transformative power of the cooperative enterprise model. A Silent Transformation explores the innovative self-help efforts of different communities across Ontario. The screening will be held tomorrow, Wednesday, September 12th, at the Van City Theatre. And we have two pairs of tickets to A Silent Transformation to give away tonight. So if you'd like to go, or if you can go, please give us a call at 604-684-7561. And that number again, 604-684-7561, for two pairs of tickets to A Silent Transformation being shown tomorrow night at the Van City Theatre. And if you have a news or event item, please email us at media@eachforall.coop. And back to you, Sandy.
Thanks, Paul. I'm really intrigued by that Otter Co-op story with the chickens on the grill. And I didn't know that they've been around for, what did you say, 70-some-odd years?
They've actually been around for 96 years.
96 years, yeah. In the Fraser Valley. And we will be interviewing folks from the Otter Co-op on Each for All in November. So that's something we're really looking forward to. And also, what a great accomplishment for them. 32,000 members?
Yes, 32,000 active members.
So that's fantastic.
It'll be a terrific story for Each for All.
Okay, and maybe they'll bring us some chicken or something for that evening.
We'll try for that.
Okay. In the meantime, let's take a quick break while we line up our first guest here on Each for All, the Cooperative Connection.
Are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh. That your elders grew by, and so please help them with yours. They see the truth before they can die. Teach your parents well, their children's hell will slowly go by. Them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh, and know they love.
You're listening to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection, and I'm Sandy Goldman with our Back to School edition. As a teacher, I've always felt most heartened by the work we do to help kids feel good about themselves and build relationships with others. We model and have students practice attentive listening, taking turns, being inclusive, encouraging, cooperative, giving back to the community, and working together towards common goals. If we do our jobs well, maybe our students will one day become members of the co-ops we feature here on Each for All. But educators know that the most important teachers are parents and families, and truly, it does take a village to raise a child. So tonight, we're going to give you some backup, some alternatives to screen time, to help strengthen the human connection, be face-to-face, and have fun doing it. I'm really pleased to introduce to you Jim DeCove, who's been creating cooperative games along with his wife, Ruth, for 47 years. Their company, Family Pastimes, is located on a farm near Perth, Ontario, not far from Ottawa. And tonight we've reached Jim by phone. Jim, are you there?
Yes, I am, Sandy.
Oh, there you are, friend. Thanks so much for staying up late. It's well after 11 back east, but you're with us, and we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about your endeavors there. But before we talk about what you've been creating there all these 47 years, Jim, I'm wondering, did you have exposure to the cooperative movement growing up?
Well, in various ways. I actually grew up on a small farm in northern Saskatchewan. And as a boy, I used to help with the farming crews, the group crews that used to go around and do group harvesting, they sharing the machinery to do this. And often I was the little kid who tagged along and helped with any tasks that a little kid could do. And of course, as I grew up, I was exposed to credit unions and the federated co-op stores and so many other kinds of things that happened in the neighborhood. And it was just a way of life and a way of thinking. And I think I carried that with me when I eventually went east and began teaching and then began the business.
So, Jim, how did you get started creating cooperative games? What was the impetus for the beginning, way back when? How did this all get going?
Well, it was probably a family thing, really, that started it. I know that when our two girls were small and helping us out with gardening, and that, and I observed how they worked so well together, and they liked doing things together, and just for the fun of it, just to enjoy doing something together, and then of course they got to game playing age, we started introducing them to a lot of the games that were available at the time, Scrabble Junior and things like that, and they were always squabbling about things, and the older one, who knew more, had bigger vocabulary, would always win, so the little one didn't want to play, and then the little one would cheat, because after all, the object of the game was to
win.
Beat big sister, so that kind of thing, and I remember going to stores and asking if they had any games that would reinforce the kinds of things that we were, just like any family, we wanted to teach the kids to share their toys and to help one another, be kind to animals and stuff like that, and I remember the shocked look on the face of first store proprietor who looked around his store and he kind of chuckled and said, "You're kidding, right? Because there isn't anything in my store that will help you to reinforce those kinds of values and experiences you're talking about." And so we just kind of left it at that. And we were living and teaching in southern Manitoba at the time, and in a nice big old house, and quite a considerable size backyard. It was more than a backyard, it was quite a big lot, and I just happened to be sitting in the back porch. It was after school, kids used to come over to come and play different games, and I was watching them select a game, and it really interested me the way they achieved consensus with deciding on what game they wanted to play, and they took into account they knew each other and who was big and who was small and who could do this well, and they would decide on a game that would be inclusive.
And they did that naturally, Jim?
Yes, because they wanted to play together.
Right.
And the games that were available for them were these, sort of the usual games like tag, where someone gets picked to be it. What a wonderful name.
Yeah, what a wonderful name.
You call a little kid it, you know, and you're up against everyone else. But so I was watching this, and they'd discuss something, and then they would, after that nice little meeting where they took account of each other's abilities and so on, and then they would move into playing the game, and then it was, of course, it's everyone for themselves, and somebody had to be a winner and everybody else had to be a loser. And they were at that point where they were just beginning to make their decision, and I was kind of, I guess, in a dreamy zone of some kind, because I figured there must be some way of getting the game decision process that was consensus, move that into a game itself. And so I called out and said, you know, I know a game I want you to try out and see how you like it. And I was kind of winging it as I approached them and sort of inventing the rules in my mind. And I said, it's kind of like hide and seek. Let's call it rescue, where I'll count to 10 at the post, and that'll be the rescue station. And you go and everybody really hide well, so no one knows where you are, and I'll come out and rescue you. And when I find somebody, we'll hold hands and rush back to the post, the rescue station, and then each of us will go out and find someone until we find everybody.
Right, sounds like a great game.
So, off we went, and I don't know if you want to hear all the details, but this was that aha moment. This was it's a long time ago, but it's very, very fresh in my consciousness right now, because it may sound rather dramatic, but it shaped my life from then on, in my teaching, my relationship with neighbors and everything, because I went out to find, and the first person I found was this little girl, and she seemed quite nervous, and I said, okay, I've come to rescue you. And so we held hands, we hippity-hopped back to the rescue station, and then she said, can I go with you? I'm not really good at finding people. And she was sort of a little nervous. So the two of us went off, and we found one of her friends, and we all went back to the rescue station, and then the two of them went off to find someone. I was on my own. And there was this process of just the look on that little girl's face when she suddenly relaxed, realizing that she didn't have to race me back to the post. It was, it just moved my heart so much. And
and also that she was doing it with someone, like that she had a partner in the rescuing, right? That she was part of a team. Or in that case, a partnership probably gave her a lot of comfort.
Yes, it did, and then as we proceeded, there was just one little boy that we still had to find, and we had our team meetings, and we shared information about, did you look behind the garage and over there in the field, and one of our group, a little boy, said, you know, we haven't been looking up. And suddenly, well, we went fanned out, and sure enough, the last person hiding was up a tree, and he'd been looking down on the rest of us, and really, to his great amusement. Then when we found him, a big cheer went up, and we all carried him back to the rescue spot. And then we said, well, you were the best at hiding, so you get to start the game again. And it just included everybody, and I that moment just something broke inside me, and in my teaching I just began doing things differently, the way you structured the desks in a room, and all these things just came forth without pre-planning, as it were, because I think once you get that integrating experience, things just flow from there. Life just carries you along, and it has. And so then when birthday parties came up and so on, I found that I altered rules for games and just began creating my own little board games and things to do so that they were more shared experiences, and things like musical chairs became a cooperative effort where we just kept eliminating the chairs and kept the people.
Oh, wonderful. That's great. So, Jim, from those early beginnings back in Manitoba, and your inspiration from that rescue game to what you learned and changed with your own two daughters in terms of having games and opportunities for inclusiveness, how did you end up creating this company called Family Pastimes, where you've been making board games for 47 years? So how did that actually happen? Did you give up teaching and decide you're going to start to create games?
Yes, I mean, it was that kind of a big leap, but it just happened again in this process that unfolded, where I would alter the rules for some of the board games we were playing, games like Scrabble Junior, where we would keep a family score. It was simply just changing that rule, and so when it be my turn, instead of using my vast superiority as an adult, I would, instead of hiding that valued X letter, I had to be just as clever to use it to maximize the family score, and yet leave it open as an opportunity for my little daughter to add on to it. And it just the feeling that created around that game was quite different. Well, there were other games then that I simply couldn't think of any way to bring cooperation into it, and so I started looking around at my own real life experiences. Like, as I mentioned before, we kept a considerable garden, and the two girls had their share in looking after things, and so I created a little board game called Harvest Time that was probably one of my first, and where the players all work together to bring in as many veggies as they can before winter arrives. So that I did the artwork and created the thing, and then my older daughter would she'd be asked to do some babysitting in the neighborhood, and she lugged this game along with her, and then the neighbors would say, "That's a really neat game. Where can I buy one of those?"
Mm-hmm.
I'd say, "Well, you can't, but I'll make one for you." And little things like that that began to occur, and created other games that are based on our experiences, like the Granny's House, where we all go on through the woods and over the streams and do different things to get to Granny's house and bring her a present and stuff like that. So it was a lot of these real life kinds of experiences, going to Granny's house or climbing a mountain and so on, so that I started taking these games to game companies, and I remember being quite surprised at the reception. I guess I was so imbued with that whole idea of creating a game in which the other players are not your enemy.
Right.
They're all, like, we're all on the same team. And so I remember presenting the Harvest Time game to a game company in Toronto, and the president there looked it over, and he thought it had possibilities, but he said, "Well, you know, it just doesn't have enough edge to it doesn't have any edge. So let's just say your neighbor is getting a little bit ahead in harvesting his veggies. We should have another piece in the game, like say a groundhog that we send over to kind of mess up his garden and hold him.
So, I guess you wouldn't have much to do with that guy, eh, Jim?
No, I was stunned. You know, I said, God, you know, if I tried that, my neighbor would come after me with a shotgun or something like
right.
that. Right. And it's strange, but, I mean, to this day, the game designs that I see out there are claimed to be based on real life, but it's not a real life that... That I experience and live, or even want to live. It's just sometimes I think I'm visiting from another planet when I see the kinds of games that are out there.
Well, Jim, you told me at one time when we spoke a few weeks ago that you have customers for your games from Europe and South America, and also you've got folks like family therapists and autism coaches getting in touch with you to use your products?
Yes, this has really been an area that I never intentionally sought this kind of market out. And it's been very heartening to have it develop. As you can tell by the name of the company, Family Pastimes, I was intent on creating games that would add to the richness of family life and to nurture sharing and kindness and those kinds of play experiences that I don't think we, even to this day, we have enough of. So recently, within the last 5 years or so, what I call the people repair business has been finding my games useful, and it's true, they family therapists, and psychologists. Recently, there's been a lot of work done using my games to deal with all the bullying that goes on mm-hmm. in school settings, and there's an autism coaches, yes, which is sort of a real revelation to me that. But you know, as I think about it, and I get the feedback from people who are using the games in this way, and they tell me, well, the games foster communication, and that's sort of the basis of the game that. You're not put in the position of, you know, in a competitive game where you're kind of hiding behind your cards and you don't want to give any clues to another player lest you concede a winning advantage in some way. Instead, you're sharing and you're asking for help and it's allowed to
right.
ask for help.
And these are the, you know, the attributes that we want to foster. And when we come to the cooperative movement, as I said off the top, you know, sharing, taking turns, working together,
yeah.
listening,
yeah.
all of these things, helping each other out is really the foundation of what we're trying to do and working towards common goals. And we see that in your games. I just want to mention that I did take a look at your website, and we'll have it up on our website, but if a person goes to familypastimes.com, are they able to get in touch with you and order the games directly?
Yes, they can. We also, if they ask, we can supply a list of stores that are in their area. If they want to patronize a local store, we have that information too. But yes, if they do go to the website, there is a shopping basket there, and everything that we make is there. And of course we're always happy to help out anybody, who any stores too, that want to carry the for games and stuff like that.
Yes, I like on the website how they're broken down by different age groups.
Yes.
And there's really a lot of detail on the websites about the games. Can I ask you about how many games in total would you have for sale at this time? Would you
Well,
say?
Roughly. I think it's 122 as of just about a week ago. I came up with a couple more what I call action games. They're based on games that I used to make a long time ago when I used to go to craft sales, big wooden table games that are like a pin and ball game. It's kind of the answer to games like foosball and hockey, you know, the tabletop. I used to make about 5 or 6 of those, but I've started basing smaller versions of them now and offer them for sale on the website as well. Yeah, there's a... I keep talking about retiring because I'm going to be 80 years old in November, I think it's almost like a calling ever since that
first game, that rescue the game.
Girl.
Yeah, and
even Ruth chides me every now and then because I may be in the wood shop and handling sort of pieces of wood, and then she'll see that I seem to be gazing out into space, and she'll say, "Aha, you're creating again."
Right, and you're the creator of all these games, Jim. You know, we want to thank you so much. We could talk for a long time, but I want to thank you so much for the work that you've done over the years, you and Ruth and the whole family, creating these games, making them available, these cooperative games. And just a shout out, if folks do attend a Silent Transformation tomorrow night at the Van City Theater, Jim is featured. Jim and Family Pastimes are featured in that, so you'll get to see Jim up close in his workshop. And Jim, we want to thank you so much, and we'll have your website up and available, and we wish you all the best going forward, and an early happy birthday, Jim. Thanks so much for joining us on Each for All, the Cooperative Connection.
Oh, my, you're much too kind. You're much too kind.
Take care, Jim.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. That's Jim DeCove of Family Pastimes Cooperative Games from Perth, Ontario. He's a very special person and doing great work for the community, for all of us. So let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back with our next guest on Each for All, 100.5 FM, Vancouver Co-op Radio, or online at cooperadio.org.
The 2018 Accordion Noir Festival, Friday to Sunday, September 14th through 16th at the Wise Hall. Friday night opens with Vancouver's klezmer troublemaker, Jeff Berner, facing off with accordion hero, Jason Webley, at his first local appearance in almost 10 years. Saturday squeezes on with the roof-shaking Dreadnought side project, the bellowing frenzy known as Polka Time. Sunday, consummate the festival with the hauntingly romantic squeezings of Wendy McNeil and a menage of special guests. The 11th Annual Accordion Noir Festival, Thursday to Sunday, September 14th through 16th. All events at the Wise Hall, 1882 Atnac in Victoria. Full details and schedule, accordionnoirfest.wordpress.com.
You haven't had too much accordion already, have you? You haven't overdosed on accordions, have you? I want to encourage responsible accordion listening.
Give me that!
It's mine!
I want it!
No, it's mine!
No, give it to me!
You have to give it back!
Stop! Instead of fighting, try working together. Honestly, openly, in a spirit of caring for others. And tune in to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. on CFRO 100.5 FM, on your dial and online at cooperadio.org. Try cooperating. You'll feel better for it.
So I ate, and then I served my myself a second plate. Hey, I had a bad week, and I wonder if it's sweet. So I'll eat, 'cause I deserve to give myself a treat. Sadness tastes like French fries, and anger tastes like wine. They're only beers, but give them time. Like tender flake of joy. My mom just called and she's appalled, because my dad don't want a spoon. I'll take that spoon and put some ice cream on my afternoon. But guilty tastes like noodles, and lonely tastes like bread. But toast can make a loyal friend. Walk it off, circle the block. The cookies and cream are starting to talk to me. I'm just crazy, but crazy tastes so good. Crazy tastes so nice. Crazy tastes like never had to go outside. Here we go now. Hey, I had a bad day, so I ate it all.
That's Canadian artist Barbara Leica and her food song, here on Each for All, the Cooperative Connection on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM and online at cooperadio.org. I'm Sandy Goldman, and tonight we're looking at the world of cooperative games. Our next guest is a wonderful resource person and board game enthusiast. Alicia Fridkin is the founder and co-host of Vancouver's West End Board Game Meetup, and her dream is to one day combine her interests in social justice and health equity with her love of tabletop gaming. Alicia, welcome to Each for All. I'm so happy you could join us.
Oh, thanks so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Alicia, what was the very first cooperative game you ever played?
Well, it's funny that you should ask me that, because I have been trying to think about what the name of this game was that I used to play with my family, with my mom and my sister, when we were little. And it was a game, it had wooden components where we were trying to do something before winter came, before we covered up those tiles. And I just had the privilege of listening to your last guest, Jim, who talked about his first game being Harvest Time. And I almost started crying, because I think that was the game. And I looked it up on my phone, and I see the image of it here, and that was totally the game.
Isn't that amazing?
It's just amazing. And that was the first cooperative game that I played, and I will never forget it. So he is definitely having an impact on future gamers and cooperative thinkers.
That's wonderful. That's exactly what he would want. So that's a really great connection that we're making there. Now, you started the West End Board Game Meetup. Why did you start that? Did you sense a need in the community, or just can you tell us a bit about why you began that?
Yeah, sure. So I love board games. My partner, I love playing board games. And when you find other people that you like, that like to play board games with you, and you like to nerd out together, it's a very rare thing. And so there are different board game meetups and board game groups around the city. But when you have a family and you have a busy life and you have a kid at home, it can be difficult to travel all over the city and engage in games for a long period of time. So I decided that I would start a meetup locally in our neighborhood so that we could find people who are like-minded, who had a similar interest, and who would come together to play games. And it wouldn't be a big deal or a big schlep. It would be a couple of hours on a night that worked for people. And that's how we started the West End Board Game Meetup.
And what's the response been from the community?
It's been a great response. So we started off, we would meet at a local bar, the Comox Bar and Grill, which is sadly no longer there.
Yeah.
And I think the very first meetup, I started it on meetup.com, and you know, you get a free account until you have 50 people. So I think we had about 12 people at our first night, and very soon after that we got more than 50 people, and now I haven't checked lately, but I think there's for sure there's over 1,000 people in the meetup. We get about 30 to 50 people out a night. Some nights we get about even 70 or more people. We've now partnered with Gordon Neighborhood House, our local you know, community center. Mm-hmm. And so they have a lot of space, a lot of lighting, a lot of tables, and you don't need to buy anything, which makes it really accessible.
Right. Now, you're playing cooperative games there and competitive games. I actually contacted you, I think, about 6 months ago when I heard about a gaming event that was going on here. And I also had seen the West End Board Games Meetup because I'm a West Ender. And you told me at the time, I think, when we first connected, that cooperative games are really popular.
Oh, yeah.
Can you say more about that and why? What's your sense of that and perhaps the need that that's filling at this point?
Yeah. Well, I think you talked a little bit before about the need for people to come together away from screens and do some, engage in an activity in person. And sometimes we call it tabletop gaming or analog gaming. And I think in particular the need for co-op games. It's a way of bringing people together where you're solving a problem together. You're putting all your minds together. You don't have that anxiety about whether or not you're good. And I hear a lot of people, a lot of women especially, who have a fear of playing games because they're not good. And I think that the board game community typically has been really dominated by men. Mm-hmm. And so I find that having cooperative games especially are a really great way to bring people in to the hobby who may feel a little bit excluded. And one of my favorite genres of games is actually party games. I have a couple of them here. And most party games, right, actually, or social games, tend to be cooperative because the point is not to win. The point is to have a good time, to laugh, to get to know the other people around you. And I've often organized game nights for colleagues, and I work with a lot of women, and we just have a blast. Or with family events or intergenerational events, it can be a really great way to connect with people. And sometimes when you see people laughing, or when you experience that laughter and that silliness, there's right. just, that's so rare sometimes.
Yes, as people are, you know, busy, you know, staring at their phones most of the mm-hmm. time, crossing the street and whatnot, don't get me started. Here there's a face-to-face opportunity and to have fun, meet new people, and work together.
Yeah.
So, and it's interesting what you're saying about women. That's kind of like what Jim was saying about that game he first started mm-hmm. with back on the farm, that rescue game where that little girl said, oh, I'm not very good at rescuing.
Mm-hmm.
But with somebody with her to support her, she could join in. So you've brought a whole bunch of games
yes.
tonight, and thank you for bringing them. Let's get you talking about some of your favorites and the different categories and who they're suited for, maybe the age group.
Sure. Okay. Well, since I started talking about party games, I think I'm going to just start with this one right here. So I'm holding up Codenames. Many of you might have heard of this. It's by a very well-known designer named Vlada Shvadl. I actually had the opportunity to meet Vlada Shvadl in person at Gen Con, which is a big gaming convention a couple years ago, and I asked him about Codenames, which has just exploded. This is the original Codenames, but you can get Codenames Pictures, there's Codenames Disney, there's Codenames Marvel, there's even an adult version of Codenames, a dirty version. And so I asked him, how long did it take you to design this game? And he said 20 minutes.
Wow.
But it's just been, it's such a hit. And
what's the purpose? I mean, what's the goal of the game?
Sure.
How does it work?
Yeah. So this is I would call this a semi-cooperative game because you're actually working in teams. And the two teams are working against each other, and each team has a code master, and it's sort of a word association game. So there's a number of words, 25 words on the table. If you were playing Codename Pictures, it would be 25 pictures. And the code master has to say one word to link several of those cards together, and then the team has to try to guess which ones they are. So one of the reasons I like this game is because it is a party social game, but it is also a little bit of a strategic game. And it's so interesting because you get to learn how other people think. Mm. And sometimes in your mind, you could have a brilliant idea. I've just linked four words together and your team members are totally thinking in a different way.
We're getting great visuals here from our technician,
yes,
Dale.
He's obviously played this game before. Yes, yes.
It sounds really fun.
It is fun. It's a blast. I highly recommend it. It takes about 20 to 30 minutes to play. And it's one of those games, especially if you play with pictures, that it's easy for people who who maybe don't have a strong grasp in English to play.
Oh, and great.
So anyways, I highly recommend Codenames.
Okay, so it's visual and we can incorporate people who don't have English as a first language.
Yeah.
Excellent. Could children play or young people play this, or is it more of an adult game?
I think that, it does say on the box 14 plus, and I'll just give you a hint about if you ever look on a pick up a board game box, there's a couple of key pieces of information that all of them have. And so one of them is the number of players. You should always take a look at that. So I'm looking at Codenames right now. It says 2 to 8. So you want to pay attention to that. A lot of party games require more people. Like this other one I'll talk about in a minute is like, I think it's a minimum of 4 to 8 people. It'll tell you the length of time. So this one, Codenames, says about 15 minutes. And I think that's really important for families, especially if you don't have all night to play a big epic 3-hour game.
Right.
You want to pay attention to that. Then the other key pieces of information is the age. So this code name says 14 plus, and I just want to give you a warning that when you see 14 plus, that is actually the highest, I find, one of the highest age brackets you'll see on a game. So this one would actually be, I think, maybe more for, it's hard to say because some kids can play more complex games, but I would say this would be for an older age group, maybe teenagers and certainly adults.
Okay, let's have another one.
Okay, so this is, another social game. This one is called Insider, and your listeners can't see it, but it's an adorable, cute little box. This game is made by a company named Oink Games, like the pig. They're
right.
A Japanese company, and they've got tons of these little games. But I like this one, Insider, because it's so fast, and this is in the genre of social deduction, which is like a whodunit game. And if anyone's ever played a game called Werewolf, which is quite popular, where you're trying to figure out who the werewolves are, in this game you're trying to figure out who the insider is. And it's basically a game of 20 questions where one person already knows the answer, and so everyone's working together cooperatively to try to guess yes or no questions, and they're asking it one person who's the master. And then the role of the insider is to try to get the group to get the right answer before the time comes out without revealing their identity. So
that sounds neat.
Yeah, it's fast, it's fun, and I've seen a lot of people have a good time with it.
Okay, let's have another. I see Pandemic, and I've heard a lot about that.
Oh my goodness, so Pandemic. So Pandemic is like your quintessential cooperative game, and this is designed by a guy named Matt Leacock, who is well known in the board gaming industry. And I just want to say that the precursor to Pandemic is a game called Forbidden Island, and then there's another one called Forbidden Desert. And Forbidden Island was actually one of the games that got me and my partner into modern board gaming. We stumbled into a game store in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was near Pioneer Square, and you go downstairs and mm-hmm. we saw this little board game section, and we both loved games. You know, we loved Crib and we loved mm-hmm. Euchre, and we picked up this one called Forbidden Island. And in that game, you are working together. Everyone has a different role, and you are trying to uncover the treasures before the island that you're on sinks. And it has this mechanic in it where there's a deck of cards that represents each place in the island, and each time, every turn, you have to turn some of them over, and that says which island tile sinks. And at some point in the game, you'll get a card that says waters rise, and you have to take all those cards that you've turned over, shuffle them, and put them on the top. So cards that have already sunk, if you haven't shored them up or surfaced them, they're going to sink again.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, and so it's a really tense but exciting game. And Pandemic is based on that same mechanic, but it has a different theme. And in this theme, you are a team of medical investigators who are going out and trying to cure different viruses across the world. And everyone, just like in Forbidden Island, you have a different special ability and a different role. So you want to consider your role and other people's role, and you work cooperatively together, traveling all over, curing these viruses. And it is so much fun. There's a whole bunch of different expansions now and pandemic and different themes. Recently, there was a pandemic Iberia that I haven't yet played. There's a dice version. There's a new Cthulhu version if you're into H.P. Lovecraft. And then there's, you know, Pandemic Legacy, which is a big campaign-based game. It was, you know, right now it's number 2 on Board Game Geek. So anyways, that's Pandemic. I highly, highly recommend it if you're interested in tabletop board games, the or cooperative games. And I think it's age 8 plus, but it is a great game to play with people who have some gaming experience, because setting it up and setting up the deck can be a little daunting if you're not used to that.
You told me before about role-playing games.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just say a bit about that? I hate to say we're going to run out of time, because we could go on and on.
I know, that's
but,
okay.
What about role-playing games?
Sure.
Those, that's fun.
Yeah, yeah. Role-playing games are great. So, and they're also cooperative. So most people have probably heard of Dungeons & Dragons.
Right.
And what they are is it's an incredibly immersive, imaginative experience. The game of Dungeons & Dragons actually has a player's handbook that has about 350 pages in it. And in each game, one person who is the game master, or in Dungeons & Dragons, it's called the Dungeon Master, and that person is very familiar with the rules of the world that you're playing in. And that person will prepare scenarios for everyone, and they kind of sit down at the end of the table with a big screen, and behind it, they have all kinds of dice and notes about the story. And everyone else who plays, those are all the adventurers, and they're traveling and working together through an adventure that the Dungeon Master is going to lead them through. So the Dungeon Master will tell these stories, and when they come against an obstacle, people will decide how they're going to deal with it, and very often you end up in having battles, and how you resolve those battles is by rolling dice.
Right.
And every individual person has a character sheet that will have different statistics or dice modifiers on them, and so it has a fun tactile component where you're rolling these dice and adding your numbers, and it feels like there's some dramatic moments in it. And I'll just say that there, even though it sounds it can sound a little bit overwhelming,
right,
there's a lot of kids who are really into this game. And I'll just quickly mention that one of my favorite games store in Vancouver, One Stop Game Shop, they have nights where they have kids playing role-playing games, not just Dungeons and Dragons, but other games. And I think it's a really great opportunity for kids to come together, have an immersive, imaginative experience, and feel the dynamics of what it's like working in a group, because there are ups and downs. Some people can be frustrating. And then the last thing I'll say about it is, you know, the TV show Stranger Things featured a number of kids in it who are playing Dungeons & Dragons, so people might be familiar with it from that.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, you've made reference a couple of times to something called Board Game Geek.
Yes.
Can you talk about that for a bit?
Sure, yeah. So I'm on it all the time.
What is it?
Board Game Geek is, I would describe it as a cross between a Wikipedia and Facebook for board gamers. So it is a giant database that lists almost every game that you can think of. And if you go on and type the game in the search bar, and you got to make sure that you spell it exactly correctly.
Right.
And then you can find it. And the community of gamers upload all kinds of photos of the game, game reviews. There's video game reviews. There's forums. So people have questions about rules sometimes. Sometimes fans make fan-based expansions or other kinds of files that you can print off to help with the game. And obviously, well, not obviously, but one of the most useful, I don't know if useful, but interesting parts is that every game has a rating. And these ratings are given by the community of people. So you'll see there's a geek rating, and then there's a non-geek rating. The geek ratings are by people who have their own board game accounts.
Right.
So you can go on and get a sense of the highly rated games, and there's all kinds of lists of the, you know, top hot games. And the reason why I say it's like Facebook is because everyone also can have their own account and upload their own game collection. And I've got all of my games listed on Board Game Geek. I think I have about 268. That's including expansions on there right now. So you can go on and keep track of your games. You can, if you're super nerdy, you can even log your plays and your wins. And yeah, you can see other people's games that they have as well, which can help with trading.
That's fantastic. You know, we're going to have that. And you sent me a whole bunch of links, like Board Game Geek links.
Yeah.
So we're going to have that on our website, as well as some of the shops that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. for the games and that. And when is the next West End board game meetup?
Yeah, sure. So we usually have games on the last Friday of every month. We take a few breaks in the summer. So the next one is coming up September 28th, which is a Friday. Mm-hmm. It's from 7 to 11 p.m. at Gordon Neighborhood House. And anyone who's interested, just come and show up. You don't have to bring games because I bring bags and bags of games and other people bring games.
You brought bags tonight.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, it's a lot of fun. I'm gonna try and make that one. It's because it's right there in the neighborhood.
Yeah. And one of the unique things about our meetup is we always have somebody hosting to welcome you at the door. And I should have said this before when you were talking about the anxiety. There's a lot of board gamers who actually have social anxiety.
For sure.
It's a great way to interact with people when you're not sure how to engage socially. So one of the things we have is someone to, at least we have two people per night to welcome you when you come in, and then to get you a seat at the table where someone will teach you a game. So it can be really intimidating when you walk into a room and everyone's head is down, they're all immersed in a game.
Right.
So we try really hard to help people integrate into and get a seat at a table.
That's really welcoming, and that's what the, you know, the any kind of meetup should really be about, meeting new people, having some new experiences, and in this case, with board games. Alicia, you've been wonderful. You're so enthusiastic. I can tell it's a real passion for you. And we really appreciate you coming on the show tonight, bringing all these games and sharing with us your knowledge and your passion for tabletop gaming, and in our case, especially the cooperative games. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We really enjoyed having you here. That's Alicia Fridkin. She's a board game enthusiast, the founder of the West End Board Game Meetup, and a great resource for us here on Each for All. Thanks so much, Alicia. Well, we're running out of time so quickly. Before I get to next week's show, talking about next week's show, Dale, did you have a message for me? Why don't you give us the message?
To the person that tried calling us, our sincerest apologies for not being able to pick up. If you want to give us another try at 604-684-8494, that's 604-684-8494. We will, hopefully that works. And if that doesn't work, email us at media@eachforall.coop, and we will hopefully get you to tickets.
Right, two tickets for A Silent Transformation, a fantastic documentary about the cooperative model being covered by some great filmmakers. We had one of them on the air a couple of weeks ago, and that's being shown tomorrow night at the Van City Theater at 6:30 p.m., followed by a fantastic panel discussion on cooperatives. Next week on Each for All, we'll have our regular check-ins with the agricultural, health, and worker co-op sectors. If you have an idea for our show, please email us at ideas@eachforall. And don't forget to check out our website for news, events, and podcasts. That's eachforall.coop. Thanks so much to the team here at Each for All for their help with tonight's program. And I want to close with a collaboration between two very dear friends, one of whom just recently passed away, the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, and Stevie Wonder, friends going back decades. He wrote a song for her called Until You Come Back to Me. Called her up and said, let's try and go for it and do this song together. And here's a rendition of the two of them from the Lady of Soul show back in 2005. This is Until You Come Back to Me. I'm Sandy Goldman. Thanks for listening to Each for All, and have a cooperative week.
Produced by Mr. Stevie Wonder, called me late one night and said, Rhea, I got a song for you. I said, I'll take it. He said, send somebody down to get it. Yeah, yeah.